Get ready for Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by TruPrep. For all your prepping needs, visit TruPrep online at truprep.com or visit a TruPrep store in Roswell or Marietta. Listen in as Doug and Amy provide helpful tips on how to get ready for anything that comes your way. And now, your hosts, Doug and Amy.
Welcome, folks. You're listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. This week on Ready Radio, we're going to talk a little bit about Jeffersonian perspective on life. I've something that's really near and dear to my heart, and I really wanted to bring this topic to our listeners. One of the things that I have done for years now is listen to a podcast called The Thomas Jefferson Hour, and it's a wonderful free podcast that it's delivered to some NPR stations and they broadcast it, but you can go and look up on iTunes or your favorite podcast finder and look for the Thomas Jefferson Hour. It's put on by a man named Clay Jenkinson, and he is a world-renowned Thomas Jefferson scholar, and he portrays Mr. Jefferson in the first person. So as you listen to it, there's a host who talks to Mr. President, and he responds back in character about his thoughts and his opinions. And Clay is such a brilliant scholar that he actually can tease out, even when it's against his own personal beliefs, as I believe he's rather liberal in some of his take. And Jefferson was kind of a fence straddler. Some things he's incredibly liberal on in a modern day liberal sense, and some things he was very conservative on. I mean, he was willing to bend some of the constitutional rules to do things like the Louisiana Purchase and other opportunities. You know, he kind of fudged on what would be called a strict ideology. But the way that this podcast goes is just incredible, and it's really worth listening to. But it's inspired me to study Thomas Jefferson and to try to incorporate some of his values into my everyday life.
Yeah, you know, it seems like I heard Thomas Jefferson on Herman Cain. Seems like Herman Cain had him as a guest.
Really?
I think so. I love Herman. He's awesome.
Yeah, I remember when he ran for president. I kind of faded out after that as far as
wasn't
I was
that
concerned.
Long ago, yeah. Yeah. I remember back. Yeah.
Well, you know.
If you took Herman Cain and mixed him with Newt Gingrich, that was actually my... You know, if you could just kind of
ideal candidate,
my ideal candidate. I thought Newt was he was a little bit of a loose cannon, and Herman, he had his heart in the right place. But if you took the two just with their best, their best assets, mixed it into one, he was my primary candidate.
Okay, I see.
It didn't happen.
Yeah, no. I'm more of a Ron Paul kind of supporter. I like a little bit more, fiscal conservatism. But and I'm not a social liberal by any stretch of the imagination, but what I am is I'm for freedom. Mm. I like to think of people being able to do their own thing because I'm not able to tell other people what to do.
And well, you try, but
other people should
work.
Not be in the position to tell me what to do either by right. the same virtue. I mean, there's kind of an egalitarianism of opinion that you can be your own person, and I think that that's a higher goal. Now, when we get into questions of like crimes against society, I think that that's very tricky because there are some things which are truly negative for a society to partake in, and there are ways to build up community and society through regulation. But every time you try that, you're taking away liberty. So it's always it's got that should be something that should be like the hardest thing that government ever does is to infringe on liberty, and it should be such a high goal that government has to ascribe to. But instead, it seems like we can pass thousands of laws a year that do little nibs and tucks on liberty all over, and nobody looks at it. Nobody feels that pressure. I mean, there should be real debate before there is something that infringes on liberty. And there may be some things which are necessary. I mean, there may be some things where you look at it and say, yeah, the harms to society versus the liberty interest is so great that we really should infringe on this liberty. And we recognize that we're infringing on liberty. But because it's such an important thing and there is such a high level of consensus that, 75-80% of Americans agree that, this is something that causes such drastic pain that we can infringe on liberty for it. Now, in the same token, we have a Bill of Rights that's established to protect the minority, and there will always be the tyranny of the majority. But if you know, you get to a point where there's such consensus within a population, and I'm not talking about a simple majority now, I'm talking about true mega majorities, where you say, you know, if you don't agree with this basic principle, operating principle, maybe you do not want to be a part of our society. I mean, I'm talking about things like murder. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, you're going to take somebody's life, the death penalty for committing a murder. But, you know, the consequence is that when you've murdered somebody, you have taken their life and they no longer have the opportunity to exert their mm-hmm. liberty interest.
Sort of so an eye for an eye sort of thing.
There are some levels where this is appropriate. And then mm-hmm. there are levels where it is completely inappropriate.
Yes.
And we don't engage in that kind of debate anymore because it doesn't seem like liberty is really a driving force for Americans.
I think we're kind of getting used to it, really, because when something happens, and you know, when something happens in little bitty chunks here and there, and it's sort of like an irritant, you know, that you sort of get used to almost.
Well, you can be conditioned for it, mm-hmm. and it starts at an early age. I mean, police checkpoints. When I was growing up, the only time you ever saw a police checkpoint was if there had been a heinous crime in that exact vicinity and they were looking for someone mm-hmm. hiding in a car.
Right.
I mean, I can understand that. But, you know, my family and I went down through a small Georgia town not that long ago. And we hit a checkpoint going into the town and coming out of the town when we were driving.
And this wasn't New Year's Eve?
No. I mean, it was just a weekend thing, and they were checking for drunk drivers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are states out there, Alaska is one of them, where that's completely illegal.
Mm.
You cannot do that. And I would argue that under, you know, the framework of our Constitution, the design of it was that things like that should not be legal. You should have to have a warrant before you're stopping people and checking them for their person, papers, or property. That's the whole idea behind the Fourth Amendment, that, you know, these illegal searches and seizures not happen. But it's eroded to a point where that's just not the way the law is. I mean, there are so many exceptions, so many warrant, 23, I think, warrantless exceptions where you can do a search or a seizure without having to get a warrant first. And at some point, you know, enough exceptions carve out the hole until there is no hole left. And that's really the way society's heading. So how do we go from what Mr. Jefferson saw as the right way to run a nation to where we are now? I mean, it's been 200 years of a divergent path that we've been on. And Thomas Jefferson saw this country in a much, much different way, a way that I would like to see this country again. I think that it's really an important aspect to be able to say, look, this country was founded on an idea, and that idea is first that everybody is equal, that you have an equal opportunity to succeed in what you want to do, and that the pinnacle goal of most people should be to be yeoman farmers. That's what Jefferson saw as the highest goal in life, to be somebody who was learned, somebody who took from the earth and grew their own lifestyle. And I think that that's a great way to look at it. You know, my primary profession is that of an attorney. But I raise chickens. I grow a garden. I you know, filter my own water. I do things that sustain and bring together and create life. And the reason for that is because I can't be nourished. My soul is not nourished from my work. My soul is nourished from my activities that bring value. And real value is in making your own food, baking your own bread, growing your own tomatoes, raising your own chickens. I one of the things I put up on our Twitter feed this last week was a picture that said, if you're trying to explain miracles to your children, just have them plant a garden. And I think that that is a truly wondrous notion, because you can take this little tiny seed and make an abundance of food, a cornucopia of abundance. And yet people don't do that anymore.
But have we gotten too big? You know, when I think, you know, I think this is a beautiful fairy tale almost. You know, could we possibly turn around from what we have become? I don't know. I don't think so. I don't feel so. When I go in the big cities and I see, you know, all the buildings and the people hustling around and all the cars, there's no place to put a garden.
It's just like the tomato seed, though, Amy. When you plant it, it starts small and it grows from there. If everybody who had an apartment grew an herb garden. Mm-hmm. That would satisfy Jefferson's fundamental need for people to be in touch with the soil. Mm-hmm. And that's what's going to bring people around full circle to want that lifestyle. How do you embed this desire to grow and to be and to do into somebody? It's by starting somewhere. And that's going to cause people to want to have land. That's going to cause people to go to their homeowners association and say, you know what? I want to have a chicken. I want to have a chicken, for crying out loud. It's going to cause people to go and create new ordinances and fight for it. I mean, this, we have gotten to a point where people have zoned out the ability to sustain themselves. They don't want this in their neighborhood. Not in my backyard, is what you hear over and over and over. And it has caused just devastation for people who want to be more. Because what do you move so far away that you're going to increase your gas costs, exponentially? I mean, that was my choice. That's what I did, is I moved out to where no one would bother me about what I'm doing. But I spend a ton in fuel going back and forth between my day job and my lifestyle. Folks, I see that we are getting very close to a commercial break. We will be right back to talk a little bit more about freedom, Jefferson, and farming right here on Ready Radio. You're listening to News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. And Doug was telling us a little bit about the Thomas Jefferson Hour, the podcast that he listens to religiously. And, we kind of have a feeling of sort of going back at history a little bit and looking at the way things maybe ought to be.
You look at, some of the things that we, in the sustainability side. I mean, we have a lot of interest in this show. We talk about, not only emergency preparedness, but, huge disasters and interesting products and things like that. But there's also the sustainability side where you're growing your own food and you're taking care of chickens and you're doing things like that. The way that our great grandparents would have done on a daily basis, what they would have called normal living, we call sustainability.
Which has become a lost art,
really,
basically.
Yes. Very much so.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's, back in the day, they knew how to, canning, for an example. Canning is a lost art. It's 100 years ago, everybody knew how to do canning. I mean, heck, even maybe 50 years ago.
Well, 50 years ago, it was considered a home ec thing and taught in schools. And I dare you to find a school that teaches anything about canning now.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem is that our public school systems have become a training ground to put people into cubicles. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's don't raise your hand, don't speak out, do well on standardized tests, absorb the information, parrot it back, which is fantastic if you're going to live your life in a little cubicle and where data comes in and you collate and data goes out. If all your life can be condensed down to a spreadsheet, what is the purpose of living? I mean, that is like the epitome of evil in society, is to take somebody who has dreams and aspirations and hope and say, condense it into a spreadsheet.
Yes. Well, but a lot of it is kind of sort of supply and demand. I'm sorry. We'll have to cut out the giggling. It's kind of the supply and demand. Where are the demands out there right now? When you go out and then job hunt or just kind of look to see where people are hiring, they're not hiring farmers, and they're not hiring, that's not where your main career is going to be, unless of course that's something that you're raised in and love and you sort of acquire. But
True. That's very true. But I think that depending on the field, now there are, some areas where this may be completely inappropriate, but if you go into a job interview and you get hit with the question, so what do you do to relax? And you say, well, actually, I bake my own bread and raise chickens and I have a small garden and I do all of this on the side. And I think that's very relaxing because it ties me in to with something that I think is important. And then you can start to talk about, bigger concepts from that.
Right.
They love it. When the last job interview I had, well, actually two job interviews ago, I was talking about baking bread.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I literally had them eating out of the palm of my hand because I could talk about something that was so different from the field I was in. It showed me to be like I would hope to be seen as a Thomas Jefferson person, a man of all seasons who could do more than one thing. And I think that any truly, you know, intelligent employer would look at somebody who has a plethora of skills, who can do more than just one thing, and bring all of these talents to bear as a huge find. And in a saturated job market, because I don't care what the numbers say, unemployment is up. They say all the numbers are down. People are just quit looking is the problem.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And so it's hard to get a job these days. So what's going to make you stand out from everybody else who can do the same thing you can, some of whom have a lot more experience than you do? Being a complete full person, being a Jeffersonian person, will make you more attractive to an intelligent employer.
Yeah, and raising chickens, I suppose, is right along that line.
It gives you, it shows a lot of different talents. I mean, it means that you have, you know, some compassion towards animals. It shows that you are dedicated. I mean, because you can't just raise chickens for a couple of days and then give up on it. You know, this is something that's going to be a continuous process, particularly if you have brooders that are creating eggs for you. And then you've got baby chicks. I mean, it becomes a self-sustaining life cycle that you can't just walk away from for a vacation. And that kind of dedication and the idea that you have to be around and take care of things, I mean, in a job, you know, some people just punch a clock and some people work for a career. And when you're in a career, sometimes you cancel a vacation in order to make things work on a deadline. I mean, I had to cancel a wedding anniversary once because of a jury trial. And I had a choice. I was either make my client sit in jail for an extra month and a half until we could come back up on the rotation again, or do the jury trial now because of the conflicts and when it could happen, and miss a vacation. And so, you know, I talked about it with my wife, and we did what we needed to do. And the guy was acquitted and walked out of jail 6 weeks early because I chose to be there for it instead of taking off. Well, you know, things like raising chickens, things like raising a garden show that you're going to be there. And these are things which make you a complete person. It shows you that you have integrity and skill and talent. It shows that you're more than just someone who punches a clock.
Yeah, and it helps with stress level. I mean, just more on a personal basis. I mean, of course, you know, on the outward view, it kind of gives you an idea of the type of person you are. But inwardly, I mean, it's really amazing what it will do for the soul. And just the peace. I mean, you know, like you mentioned earlier about planting a garden, you know, if you wanted to, you know, show your children the true definition of a miracle, just plant a garden. And I mean, there really is something to be said for that. I remember the first time I grew squash, I was just blown away by the beautiful, flower that bloomed. Honestly, I ran and got my camera and I did a little, you know, because I'm an artsy fartsy kind of person, very right brained. And Doug laughs because he knows this. Grabbed my camera and I was, you know, kind of looking at the way that the light was hitting it, kind of coming through the leaves. And let me tell you, I got some beautiful shots. I mean, they're frameable shots. They were just gorgeous. And I was just in awe. And I mean, just to hold these delicate, you know, beautiful little flowers, and found out later those are edible.
Yeah.
Have you ever eaten one?
No, I have not.
I haven't either. I've seen like a recipe, and I've never tried this because, well, we have a puppy now and I'm not sure how I'm going to grow my garden this year. but that's another topic for another day. I'll bring my husband in for that one, but
or maybe get Mark from True Prep back because he was here to talk about the gardening episode.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Well, I've seen that they're and not to go on another bunny trail, but the flour from the squash plant, you can actually like bread it and fry it. I've seen.
Interesting.
Yes. Yes.
Well, you know, you find any good old American fair and they will deep fat fry anything, anything you want.
Especially down here in the South in Georgia.
Even your shirt. You could take your shirt off and hand it over and they would deep fat fry it and hand it right back.
And
it would
probably be good.
Anything fried is downright tasty.
Wrap that baby in bacon and fry up.
You know, one of the things that I miss, I'm from Minnesota, okay? The thing that I miss most at the Minnesota State Fair was the deep fried cheese curds. They took the cheese curds, fresh Wisconsin cheese curds, dipped them in batter, deep fried them. They were gooey. They were just, oh, salty, wondrous, fantastic things. Heart attack on a plate. That and the all-you-could-drink milk.
Kind of sounds gross.
No. It's amazing.
I mean,
really
I would
is.
Try it because I'll eat anything. at least once.
Do you like mozzarella cheese sticks?
Sure.
Okay, imagine cheddar mozzarella cheese sticks.
Okay.
Only with, instead of the bready stuff or the crumb coating, it's bready.
Okay.
And really good.
Yeah, I can dig it.
Captain D's fish, that batter with cheese inside.
Okay. Gotcha. So that was our bunny trail.
There we go.
Okay, there it goes. So we need to find our way back. What was our topic?
We were talking about Jefferson's ideals and making yourself a whole person, and how, you know, you said that we had moved away and nobody hires farmers. Mm. But I've made the point, and I think put it fairly well, that farming creates a better person that every employer would appreciate.
Yeah. Well, that's true. I guess when you come from it at that standpoint, I guess more my point was there's not a whole lot of farming jobs out there. Like if you're looking to, you know, kind of if your career path, if you know, was that you wanted to have a small farm, I don't know.
Well, the hope here, what I'm trying to foster is the idea that this shouldn't be a vocation. It should be a passion.
Yes.
And by making it a passion, I mean, most people go home and watch an hour and a half of TV a night. Instead of watching an hour and a half of TV a night, you went out and weeded your garden for an hour and a half, you would be a much healthier person overall. Not just physically, but emotionally and mentally. And that's going to make you a better person at work.
Well, how do people know what they're missing? I mean, if you've never had this introduced in your life, if you were never a child that got to get out there and get their hands dirty and play with their parents and dig up worms and you know, develop a love or even be introduced to this at all, it's kind of like if you've never had ice cream in your life, you wouldn't know that you're missing it. You know,
cheesecake.
What I mean?
My son won't eat cheesecake. He turns up his nose. He won't touch it. He's never tasted it.
Really?
Yep.
And he's never tasted it.
Never tasted it. Because it's icky, and he'd rather have ice cream. He has no idea what he's missing out on in cheesecake. I've never tasted anything more delicious in my life. And
I have to agree with you.
I was the same way. Mm. When I was a young kid, no one could force me to eat cheesecake. And then there was the one time when I got bribed. Now, I still cannot figure out why my mother was so insistent that I try cheesecake. Because I'm sitting here like, okay, boy, if you don't want it, I'll take it. You know, that's fine. Yeah, no dessert tonight. I'm sorry. But she bribed me into trying the cheesecake. And then there was that epiphany that this is amazing. Mm. And I think that moment in gardening for most people is a tomato. When you grow a tomato plant, you can do it in a small container, you can do it on a patio, you can do it on a windowsill if you had to. It grows up, you get 8 or 9 big, juicy, big boy tomatoes that are just perfectly red and round and taste like nothing you've ever had before. And you realize, I did this. This is from me. I see we're coming up on another commercial break. Folks, we'll be right back to talk a little bit more about Jefferson, Liberty, and gardening in just a moment. You're listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, The Talk of the Town.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. One of the things that we had talked about over the commercial break was, you know, the fact that a lot of people don't have the ability to really raise chickens because they live in a subdivision or they have a homeowners association.
Such as me, yes.
And a lot of people, you know, take that and they say, well, you know, these are the... There was an episode of Duck Dynasty where they had chickens in the yard and the homeowners association called in on it. And Jace got up and gave a rousing speech about how this is what, you know, freedom means, and the homeowners association president... And this is in somebody's garage, right? The Homeowners Association president turns and says, well, these are the terms that you agreed to when you moved here. And that's that. And that was that. But for some people, it's not that. I had a friend a couple of years ago. His name was Andrew. And he went by the moniker the Roswell Chicken Man. And he appeared on CNN and Fox News, and he became something of a local celebrity because of his fight to try to change what people viewed as permissible in the city of Roswell. And I knew Andrew for years, and I know his story in great detail. I tend not to go to Roswell. I tend to just stay out of the area. I had gone over there for court a couple of times. I knew what it was like, but it's for the people who don't live right in the North Atlanta metro, who don't know, Roswell's a bit more of an affluent area but it's still not quite the full country club mansion type of place. I mean, maybe you can give us a little more perspective on it, Amy.
No, I think you hit it dead on. You know, it's seems to be now. I mean, I've I'm a bit familiar with it, but you of course don't live out there, and I mean, it seems like a nice area. It seems like the people are nice. We've got some good shopping out there, and but I mean, you don't see like million-dollar mansions.
No,
on every corner,
and you don't see livestock either.
No, no.
But what happened was the Roswell City Council, when they wrote their ordinances, they had said, and I'm paraphrasing, but this is the as I remember it. They said that on lots of more than 2 acres, you could not have you could have any animal except for swine and poultry. Okay, mm-hmm. So over 2 acres, any animal except for swine and poultry. And then they said, but on lots of under 2 acres, you cannot have any animals except for swine and poultry.
Wait, what?
Yeah, and it was clearly a drafting error. Mm-hmm. So on the way it read was you can have anything but pigs and chickens mm-hmm. on a big lot, but mm-hmm. on a small lot, what they meant to say is you can't have anything.
Right.
But they said because they just cut and pasted, they said you can't have anything but swine and poultry. Mm-hmm. So then that meant that on a small lot, you could only have mm-hmm. swine and poultry. Mm-hmm. And so Andrew went and got some chickens. And then city ordinance zoning people came out after him, and he took him to court and fought him. And being a rather cantankerous old man, he fought them vocally in the media and antagonized the city prosecutors and the city attorney and the code enforcement people through various name-calling incidents in public media, and really got their attention. It was a very interesting outcome.
I do remember reading some of that stuff in the newspaper. I remember seeing it on the news, and I was kind of, you know, I don't live in Roswell. I live out in Gwinnett. But, you know, I mean, I kind of remember thinking, why is this such an issue? I mean, because, you know, it's like with me where I live, you know, we're not supposed to have chickens in our neighborhood. But if I didn't have a rooster or wasn't really loud and I just kind of gave some free eggs to my neighbors to kind of stay hush hush, they wouldn't mind, and you know, I don't think it would have been that big of a deal.
There is a good question as to why this became such an outrageous issue, and I think that it became a point of pride for mm-hmm. the people who were involved on both sides. Mm-hmm. I mean, for Andrew, he knew he was in the right on having the chickens because mm-hmm. the ordinance said
the way
that
it was written,
and mm-hmm. he fought it, and in the end the city had their hands slapped and they were told, he's grandfathered in. Mm-hmm. You should have wrote a better ordinance. Mm-hmm. But then the problem is nobody can ever do everything perfectly. I mean, we have such a confluence of laws that you're going to slip up sometime. Mm-hmm. And when you're in the crosshairs, when you've been targeted, this is where it ends up. And he was accused of illegal dredging when we had the floods back a few years ago. Remember when it was Austell that mm-hmm. was almost underwater?
Mm-hmm. So was this after the fact, I guess?
Yes, this is after the whole chicken thing really ended.
Right.
He went out and he dug some trenches through his yard to redivert water so that it wouldn't wash out his house. Mm-hmm. And they said that he had done this without a permit, and he was in violation of 2 ordinances. Mm-hmm. And he was tried and convicted of those ordinances, and according to my recollection, mm-hmm. the best that I can remember. And then he was sentenced to 2 6-month sentences in the city jail.
Wow.
For his illegal dredging.
Okay. So on his own property.
Yes.
In order to keep his house from flooding.
Yes.
And he redirected water and ended up in jail.
Yes.
For a year.
Well, you get good credit for, mm-hmm. and he obviously had good credit, so he didn't serve a full year. He served about 8 months total on mm-hmm. a year sentence, after which he was bankrupt. They were seizing his house, and things did not end well. I mean, it was a truly tragic story mm-hmm. of what, when big government gets the idea that they want to make an example out of you, the power that the government can wield against a person. I mean, the end is that we need good people in politics. We need people who would step back and say, wait a minute, this is not worth putting someone in jail for a year. It mm-hmm. would never happen. And I dare anyone to find another case out of that court where somebody received an actual jail sentence for a city ordinance mm-hmm. like that. And right. It really was because Andrew had made very powerful political enemies, and they brought the full weight of the law to bear against him. But what's to prevent that from happening to anybody? I mean, how do we stop that from happening? When it's a county ordinance violation, you have no jury. No jury would ever have convicted him, but the judge went along with it because, you know, you get into that situation where there's no checks or balances on the power. And it's up to the you know, quality of the prosecutor and the character of the judge to ensure that justice happens in that instance. And we have elected officials. Prosecutors are elected in Georgia. The judges are elected in Georgia. And people who abuse their power need to be held accountable. But people don't know. I mean, these are stories that don't get out, and people don't know. I mean, when it happened, when the final end event happened, and Andrew's house exploded with him inside of it during when they were trying to evict him, the media that covered it was Alex Jones's show and Creative Loafing. And since I was a friend of his and I knew the details, the best reporting I saw was Creative Loafing. I mean, there were some flybys on CNN and Fox News, but Creative Loafing had it pretty well nailed down. They missed a few little details, but the overall narrative was pretty dead on. And that story is still floating around out there in the web. You can go find the Creative Loafing story on the Roswell Chicken Man and find out the details. But how do you hold in? I mean, how do you make people accountable? How do you keep government in check? What is the underlying principles? The reason is you have to have liberty. What it comes down to is liberty. And here was a government that was going to enforce the letter of the law no matter what. For why? To impose on a man's liberty to do what? To sustain himself? I mean, raising chickens is not like raising ferrets. You know, this is something that gives you meat and it gives you eggs and you can stuff your pillows with it. I mean, these are useful creatures that have value for everybody. It's not just a luxury item or a toy or a status symbol. This is something that's very wholesome and practical. Mm-hmm. So why bring that kind of power to bear on it? It's not like he was growing, you know, methamphetamine.
I don't think you grow methamphetamine, but yeah, I see what you mean.
you get my point.
I get your point. I mean, our forefathers would be rolling over in their graves right now if they could see, you know, what was happening. And I just really hate that. You know, when Big Brother tries to make an example of something that just ticks them off. And, you know, I mean, I think when you have the personality to stand up for what you believe is right, it's important that you do so. And
I think everyone needs to have that personality. That is a character trait. To show that means that you have character. Mm-hmm. And it is not something that should be punished. It's something that should be rewarded.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, in certain circles it is, you know, but, you know, when you do stand up, I mean, usually there's, I mean, and I hate to say it, but sometimes you end up paying for it. But when you...
The nail that sticks up gets hammered.
Yeah, yeah.
And in a conformist society, that's what becomes. But we don't have to become a conformist society. We can be something that celebrates diversity, real diversity, not just diversity of ethnicity, but diversity of talent, diversity of thought, diversity of practice. People who want to live an alternative lifestyle. And I'm sorry, but prepping has become an alternative lifestyle.
It is.
You know, sustainability is alternative. Raising chickens is alternative. These are all things which are different from the norm now. And it didn't used to be that way, but it is now. And the way we fight is to say that we recognize that this is just as important as any other diversification. This is important as a value system. And we should celebrate that as value.
Yes, you're dead on. Tell you what. Stick around. We will be right back. You're listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, The Talk of the Town.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
We're back, folks. You're listening to Ready Radio. I'm Doug. Amy's in studio with me, and we're just finishing up our show about Thomas Jefferson, liberty, freedom. And we kind of did a little bit of a rabbit trail there where we talked about, you know, how government can be brought to bear against a single person. One of the good examples of this, besides, you know, the Roswell Chicken Man, has been in the news lately about the Bundy Ranch and how, you know, here's another example of the government coming down to bear on one individual who's trying to stand up for liberty. And, you know, he had these grazing rights from the late 1800s. It's an open range state where if you don't want the cattle somewhere, you fence them out. And it's your obligation as a landowner to fence out any cattle you don't want walking across it. He's refused to pay fees to the government, which were set up after he had rights that had been established for generations. Yep. And the next thing you know, he's surrounded by over 200 mm-hmm. federal agents. And what happens? I mean, this is the makings of another tragic story, just like the one that I've been telling. But instead of it going, you know, drastically wrong very fast, hundreds of people poured in from the surrounding states and all across the nation. People who did an unarmed, you know, nonviolent protest to stand in the gap and say, this will not happen here. And there are some fantastic photos floating around on Twitter and on Facebook and in the InfoWars website, mm-hmm. where pictures of people standing, and the one that's iconic, what stands out in my mind is there's this bridge. And on one side, there's Bureau of Land Management law enforcement vehicles. Then there's the overpass bridge. On the other side, there's a line of horses and people standing in the gap, mm-hmm. literally mm-hmm. in the gap, to say no further. Mm-hmm. And guess what? There's no bloodbath. The federal government backed down, released the cattle they were holding, and ended the standoff.
Yeah, there must be elections around the corner or something. I don't know.
Well, there's a lot of backstory there, and there's a lot of allegations flying about back dealing and underhanded deals that are going on about.
Well, a lot of the other ranchers have taken off. I mean, over this, and was it 1998? I guess when the federal
Area used to have 53 ranches, and mm-hmm. Bundy is the last one left. 52 have pulled up stakes because it's too expensive with the new grazing requirements mm-hmm. and all the new regulations that they have all quit. He is the last mm-hmm. man standing.
Yeah. Yeah, all because of the tortoise, is what I heard.
Yeah, sure. They had a tortoise facility where they were keeping these tortoises to protect them. It ran out of funding in 2012, and they euthanized over 1,000 of them.
Really?
Yeah.
That's part I have not heard.
Yeah.
You know, interesting.
My friend down in South Georgia, who does a lot of research for this show for me, his name's Brian. He does a lot of the backstory and helps keep me up to speed on things. Brian sent me this article. It was a, you know, obscure article in a Nevada newspaper about the loss of funding for the turtle habitat and how at the end of the year they was going to be shut down. And then there was a follow-up article that said because of the loss of funding that they've shut it down and they euthanized 1,000 of these tortoises. And it was just an obscure little paper in the town that was in. But lo and behold, here's their whole thing is they got to protect the tortoise, but they're willing to euthanize 1,000 of them because they ran out of money.
So they're just going to be set free?
Yeah.
Just
really.
Open the floodgates and let them go? Live on their own in Mother Nature?
That's, you know, that's
how God planned it. I don't know. I'm so confused.
that's the beauty of anything having to do with bureaucracy. At the end of the day is that they'd rather euthanize things than just let things take its natural course. And it all comes down to funding. I mean, that's really the truth of it. But here's another story about, you know, how the loss of liberty and how far we've come from the idea of holding up someone who produces as an ideal. And I mean, that's really what Jefferson was getting at. The yeoman farmer is a producer. He makes something. He contributes to society. You know, the opposite is somebody who just shuffles paper or who doesn't create value. Mm-hmm. You know, when life can be reduced to a spreadsheet, what is it?
It's not much of life there, Doug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what we come down to. So if, you know, I'm sure that we have listeners who spend all day, you know, sitting in a cubicle, crunching numbers, filling out spreadsheets, and they feel this need to do something more. And where do you start? You start with a tomato plant in one pot. And when you taste the ripeness of something that you've grown yourself, it starts with making a loaf of bread from something, some flour you ground yourself. It starts with knowing that you can do some animal husbandry. Maybe not in your current situation, but learn about it. Plan for it. Maybe if you get your couple of acres, you can have some guinea hens. They love to be on their own. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have some 5 acres up in North Georgia for your bug out location, you could have some guinea hens, you know, free ranging on there, and just something to enjoy when you go.
And I really would like to challenge our listeners. If you've never grown anything, maybe going the chicken route isn't in your cards, but you know what, you can grow a little, you know, something in the window or on the deck in a container or something in the yard. And you know what, maybe your first try won't go so well. I've had some tries that have been excellent. I've had some that I've you know, wasn't really sure why my little seedlings didn't get any further than little bitty seedlings. You know, and but it's not rocket science, and you just have to give it a try. And you don't have to read, you know, everything, every article that's out there. You just have to dig a little hole, plant a seed, water it, give it a little love.
Well,
and
you know, reading every article that's out there brings up an excellent point, and that is that, you know, a good guide goes a long way. Having a book that you can page through and get some, you know, valuable information, some tips and tricks to avoid pitfalls, really goes a long way. And that's one place where our sponsor True Prep really excels, is their library. They have a wide selection of books on homesteading and sustainability that you can read through and get the basics so that you don't make, you know, beginning mistakes. And it helps build confidence too, because you know that you're on the right path. I mean, they have several books on raising chickens. I know they have Stories Guide to Raising Chickens. They have a book on brooding, on how to raise chickens from eggs. They have a fantastic books on canning, even the Ball Blue Book of Preservation. It teaches you everything you need to know about canning. They have a book called Put It Up, which is a fantastic guide for canning of small batches, things that we might actually do on a weekend. You know, if you go to the farmer's market and get a bushel of strawberries and decide to make jam and put it up, that's the book that'll teach you how to do it with a small batch. They have some wonderful books on gardening, on what to plant, where, when, and of course they have a seed selection which is second to none of all heirloom quality seeds. I know some of our listeners will remember our show on seeds when we had Mark from True Prep, you know, who was an amateur gardener who was just a plethora of information talking about the seeds that they have that are all selected for this area. So, I mean, the library at True Prep is really a fantastic place to go to get some of this basic information. And I think that that really should be this week's True Prep product of the week.
Yes, there you go. There you go, folks. This week you have the books, the resources. And let me tell you, Doug, one of the things I just absolutely love is that I am a little concerned one of these days we may not have Google, and you know, as a possibility.
No Google Docs?
No.
No Google Spreadsheet?
No. No. I know how attached you are to the Google Spreadsheet stuff, but
could,
no.
We couldn't make that the product of the week this week, could we?
No, we cannot.
Oh, okay.
No, we're going to have it in paper print, and that way if anything happens, you're going to have access right there at your fingertips.
Absolutely. I mean, it really is a great resource. Plus, you know, you can't really curl up with a tablet and have that sort of nice, relaxing experience like you have with a book. And you know me, I'm a huge Star Trek fan. They made a point in all the Star Trek movies to show that they used real books still.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason was is because there is something to a book that's different than something that you can read off of a tablet.
You know, and it's funny you mentioned that, because my daughter would agree with you. She is a little bookworm. And about, I want to say maybe 2 or 3 years ago, I thought the coolest thing in the world, and this was right when the Nook came out, and it was so cool. And I remember doing all my research between the Nook and the Kindle, and which one should I get her? She was going to be so excited, and she was initially. And then the Nook was put down, and she went back to her paperback books, and that's what she asked for. She's like, Mom, I know, but would you just get me?
I have a paperback copy of Dune by Frank Herbert that I have been reading since I was in fourth grade.
Oh.
And that particular edition, that paperback, means something to me that none of the other ones, and I've got a lot, I've been given copies. Everyone knows it's my favorite book.
Mm-hmm.
I've been given copies. It doesn't read the same. I don't care. I know where the words are on those pages. Mm. Have read it so many times from that version. And it makes a difference. It really does. So get a real book. Go to True Prep and get a real book and sit down and learn how to build your own chicken coops.
That's right. And then plant a tomato tree.
There you go.
Tree. Bush.
Well, they are fruit. Tomatoes are fruit.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I don't think it's a tree, though. It's more of a... little bush.
Yeah, I'm okay with either.
And something else, just kind of a little bunny trail. The trash can potatoes, have you heard of those?
Oh, yes, I have.
Uh-huh. Okay, I'm totally doing that this year.
Okay.
But I'm going to buy a new trash can at Sam's Club, because they're like $25.
Uh-huh.
It's the really big industrial, you know, rubber kind. Rubbermaid makes them. And so basically, all you do is you just kind of put a couple little holes in them, some drainage holes in the bottom, and then you layer, sort of like a lasagna effect. You'll put some of the dirt in there, put little potato spuds. Have you ever had a potato that you sat around on the counter too long and started to sprout?
The eyes.
The eyes, exactly. So you just take and you cut them in pieces so that, you know, you have an eye on each piece, and put them in the bottom. and then you put some more dirt on the top. Well, you wait until you get some greenery growing up through the top. It sort of looks like a nice, you know, vine.
Mm-hmm.
And when it gets, oh gosh, I'll have to look it up. I want to say maybe about 12 inches or so, then you put some more soil on the top, and it'll keep growing. Mm-hmm. And then you put more soil, and it keeps growing. And you put more soil, and it keeps growing. And what's happening is little potatoes are growing, not in the first little layer, but they're growing all the way throughout the layers. And you can, I forget how many pounds of potatoes you can get, but I was shocked. You can get a lot of potatoes out of a trash can.
Yeah, it's really remarkable. The other design that I've seen is using old pallets, and you can repurpose the wood out of the pallets in such a way that it's very easy to pull it apart. And pallets are free. Go to Craigslist and you get free wood. I mean, it's good for burning. It's good for building things, as long as you're not too, you know, afraid of splinters. You wouldn't want to use it for flooring, but, you know, it's a fantastic way to get free, good burning wood is pallets from local industries. Folks, we're coming up at the end of our show. We really appreciate you listening. Check out our sponsors, True Prep, Kudzu Tactical, and iTech. They are all great people doing things to advance the prepping world and to help people get more ready and prepared. You're listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
You've been listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by True Prep. For all your prepping needs, visit True Prep online at truprep.com. Or visit a True Prep store in Roswell or Marietta. Tune in each week as Doug and Amy get you ready for anything that comes your way. Ready Radio, Saturday evenings at 5, only on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.